Okay. So we're going to talk about that in three areas. One is some of the tools that we can use to support clinicians in a clinical encounter. Next is to talk about continuing education in your agency, your program, your unit. And finally, to talk about assessing agencies, programs, and policies in terms of cultural humility. This is going to be lightning fast, as you know, panels are like that. I'm going to try and leave some time for questions at the end of mine, and I posted a handout with resources. So if you see something that looks interesting and I kind of blew past it, there's more there. You can go to the resources that are listed, I mean, they're posted. You can go find out more about it. All right, and then a brief comment on what I mean by cultural humility. The term you're more familiar with most likely is cultural competence. The Office of Minority Health definition comes from the 1980s, and it's cultural and linguistic competence is a set of congruent behaviors, attitudes, and policies that come together in a system, agency, or among professionals and enables effective work in cross-cultural situations. And that's pretty good. It was really cutting edge when it came out. But I prefer cultural humility, which is a term that came out by Tarvalone and Murray Garcia, who are here in the Bay Area. And their definition was commitment and active engagement in a lifelong process that individuals enter into on an ongoing basis with patients, community, colleagues, and with themselves. And I like that one better. It's more about the process. It's not something you kind of learn the list and then move on. It's not like CPR. It's a process. It's something you engage in over time. And it should be thought of less like a skill and more like a professional competency, the same as ethics or teamwork or the use of evidence. Okay, so cultural humility. You will catch me at times probably slipping into the cultural competence term. So for the first piece, which is tools that we can give clinicians to help in a clinical encounter, I think we need to start with assessment, and what we hear over and over is that you should assess a patient or a client for culture, but there's not a lot out there to help you do that. Most of the tools that we have say, you know, what is their race, what is their religion, what language do they speak. Sometimes if we're lucky, we know how many years of education, what kind of occupation, where they live, but not much more than that, and that's pretty brief. If you want to have something more complete, depending on your setting and how things are set up, there are ways to do that. These three graphics are of kind of anthropologically based models, and each one of them has a list of questions associated with them. They're all three models by nursing theorists. The middle one, Geiger and Devizar, there's actually a tool online, which is in the resource on that's posted. None of them have been studied, so I can't tell you, yeah, this is great, this really assesses somebody's culture, and it has a relationship to health outcomes. As far as I can tell, there are no tools that do that, but that's a ripe area for research, should any of you like to engage in that. And these are available, and they're all useful and interesting. Rachel Spector also has one like that, based on her 9-component grid, but in addition to that long tool that she has, she also has one on heritage consistency, which is much shorter. So someone says, I am Lebanese American, or I am Irish, whatever they say they are, you can actually assess how much do they identify with that label that they've given you, and it's shorter. And Kleinman is a medical anthropologist who has done Kleinman's questions, which in some circles are famous, if you're nerdy enough. And his questions are shorter, but the answers are longer. These are his questions. These questions work really well for a problem-based visit. So if somebody comes in with a complaint as opposed to they're in for their annual exam, these questions work quite well, but you have to have time to hear the answers. So those are good. So those are the ones that I put on the resource list that you can consider. Certainly the longer ones can be made shorter. If you are in an area where you deal with pediatrics or hospice or home visits, you can pick the questions you think are most appropriate to your area. And since none of them have been studied, there's no reason that you have to be really true to the original tool. They have got validity, though, in the sense that they all come from specific models. Okay, the next thing for your clinician are clinical guidelines. And clinical guidelines, I have not found a lot on really any evidence to show that they increase consistency of care, although it seems like they would. Certainly, I found nothing about how you incorporate culture into them, but it's obvious that it needs to be there. And an example for me as a nurse midwife is the placenta. You know, at the hospital, you're not supposed to take human tissue home. Some people, some groups want their placenta. What is the big deal? But it becomes a big deal if it's not in the guidelines, because the clinician is there to enforce the hospital rules, and they're not supposed to take it, and the family doesn't get it, and it gets into a big brouhaha, when all you had to do was put in the guidelines, it's okay for people to have their own placenta. So guidelines should take that into account. Now, the Institute of Medicine has put out some recently, about a year ago, guidelines for guidelines. And here they are, and I put in red the ones I thought most key to culture. And the key piece here, I think the take home for this, is that there are a lot of guidelines available. There's these guidelines on how to create your own. There are guidelines online that you can just have, and those are in the resource list that's posted. But you really need to make them yours. And that means talking to the people that you care for, the people that you serve, making sure that their concerns are incorporated into the content of your guideline, both in the process and in the ultimate content of the guidelines. So I think that's the take home there, is that there are a lot of guidelines out there you can use, but you need to make them appropriate to your setting. So that's what I've got for clinicians. Now, for continuing assessment, there are a couple of tools you can use to assess your staff in terms of cultural humility. These have been studied somewhat. They are reliable. You do get the same results over and over pretty much. They are based on models. The model I'm showing you here is one that is the Intercultural Development Continuum, and they've put out an assessment. They're all self-report, so it's how a clinician feels about their own competency in terms of culture. None of them are based on observation, and certainly none of them are based on health outcomes. But you could use them, and I think one way you could really use them well is to give yourself a sense of where you need to go with continuing education at your agency or your unit, but also for grants. You can use it if you have high scores here. If your clinicians have had a lot of experience working with different cultures and score highly on these tools, you put that in your grant as why you should be given money to work with these groups. Or you put it in a grant for why you need more help in getting more cultural humility into your staff. So I think they're useful that way. There's three of those listed in your resources. Now, in terms of what should go into continuing education, I have not found a pile. I haven't found really hardly anything on the federal level on what should be there. But the California Endowment has put out a really nice set of guidelines for managers in continuing education. And that's what I'm going to put up here for you here. They have principles. And I've, again, highlighted the ones I think are most important. And I'm blowing through this. If you want to look at their guidelines, they're online. And they're great. I think they're great. They're old. They're about 9 years old. But I really like them. And since there's no evidence out there on what works the best that I know of, I just pick the things I like. So I like their principles. And you can see that there's some here. The incremental piece is why I was saying I like cultural humility better as a term than cultural competence. This is something that continues over time. You keep working on it. And it should be integrated into all your continuing education offerings. This should not be just a separate course. Anytime you talk about any clinical issues, culture should be part of that, and it should be institutionalized as part of your program. In addition to these principles, the California Endowment gives you content to cover in terms of attitude, knowledge, and skills. So here's what they have under attitude. Again, you can see that these are things that apply to any clinical issue, and you should always be thinking about this the same way you're always thinking about ethics or evidence. It's a professional competency, so this should not be like a separate piece. This should be involved in everything that you teach. Again, knowledge. Say you're talking about asthma, or you're talking about vaccines, or you're talking about oncology, you can see that these topics that they say are important to include in terms of culture should be in every clinical offering that you give. You always want to know what are the health disparities in terms of a given issue. You always want to know what the alternative medicine is. What are your resources? So, as, again, should be integrated into all your offerings. And then finally, their comments, their recommendations on content for skills. Here I do think you could make it a separate course if you wanted. It's a lot about self-assessment. Do you understand what your own cultural values are? And many people have never really thought about that. Communication and access to resources, how to use interpreters. These are things you could look at separately if you wanted in your continuing education program. Okay. Moving on to organizational assessment. This is a model from the Institute of Medicine, kind of an old one, where they explain how they think that these barriers to care can affect health outcomes. And if you look on the far left there at the barriers and think about it in terms of a clinician's point of view, how many of these things does the clinician actually have any control over? Now, the personal family piece, you can, as a clinician, work with that. But when you're looking at the structural and the financial piece, you can't do a whole lot about that. That works on the organizational level. That's why it's important to look at assess your organization for cultural humility. And you can also assess policies. So I know of two tools for that. One was commissioned by the Health Resources and Services Administration quite a while back, and it's in the resource list. And it's based on classic program evaluation. So it's process, structure, outcomes. And it's lengthy. If you do this, it's going to take quite a bit of time. But I do think it's worthwhile. Again, I think you can use it for grants. You can certainly use it for self-evaluation to figure out, okay, where do we need to work more? And once you've gone through it once and you know where that information about your organization is, you can update it every couple of years and take a look at it and see how you're doing. There's a similar one that's also fairly lengthy that looks not at organizations but at policies. And it was commissioned by the was produced by the National Center for Cultural Competence at Georgetown University. And it's also in your resource list. Again, fairly lengthy, but it gives you a lot of good information about your organization. And I think it's well worth doing. Now, we have a speaker on the class standards. And I am not going into all the various crediting and licensing bodies that we all respond to because everybody has their own. But for federal monies, you do need to meet at least 4 of the 14 class standards. And here they are. And I just threw those in there to remind us that we have many various regulations that we need to respond to in terms of cultural humility. And that should be part of what you do when you're looking at your organization. Okay, I think I went through even faster than I planned, but that's good. We got 5 minutes. Okay, perfect. So I have 2 lessons learned that I hope you got out of it. One is, as advertised, I hope that you got some new resources and tools for your agency or your unit. And as I said, there's lots of detail in the resources that are posted. But I also hope that you took away that this is something that needs to be permeating throughout your organization or your unit or your program, whatever it is you're thinking about. It needs to be part of our organizational culture, just as ethics or social justice or evidence needs to be part of everything we do. And I hope that you've taken that away from that here too. Okay. Thank you. And I think we can take questions now. Go ahead.
Hi. Terrific presentation.
Thank you.
I wanted to just ask you, you keep referring to the list. Is there a specific location that we find this list?
It's part of the conference.
Okay.
So there's a posted handout. There's a handout. It has my slides, and it has a list of references.
Okay.
And many of them are linked, so you can just click. It is online. Okay, great. I didn't check to see if it's online, but I assume that it is. I gave it to them.
Okay. The question that I wanted to ask was that how do you make a case to your senior administrator or board of trustees that doing an organizational assessment is even valuable? It's really a strategy question more than tools, but there's a premise here that somebody believes that there's an importance of this.
Yeah, and with longer presentations, I answered the so what question. why should you care? And there's a lot of reasons to care about cultural humility. One is that you're required to. So that's good for administrators. You're required to. You're required to meet certain standards. If you answer to JCO, you've got to answer certain cultural standards. If you get federal monies, you have to meet the class standards. Another is that it is linked to outcomes. There's not a lot of evidence, but the initial evidence is good. Particularly in terms of patient satisfaction, and there's some stuff out there in terms of diabetes, and not just you know, do they lose weight or something, but actual A1Cs, asthma. But there's not lots of it. What's out there is positive, and it would be a great study to be doing. Again, I can't link those outcomes specifically to these tools. We have a lot of work to do in this area.
Okay, thank you.
And it's the right thing to do. That's your best argument. Other questions? It's part of quality of care. It's, you know, if you want to give good care, you have to think about this.
I've used the Cronella and the 12 domains and I think for some of the undergraduate folks in the nursing field, I use that a lot. And it really works well from ground level, solid foundation. Certainly there's a lot of other models. I'm just drawn to that too, sort of like what you were saying, since there's not a lot of research around, but that's the particular model that I like, and certainly coupled with, you know, another course around motivational interviewing or counseling skill technique.
Right.
I mean, coupled with those models, I think it's outstanding, and it is good for
sort of
delivering the
information outcome. Each of those models has a textbook associated with it, and they show you the domains, and they show you questions to get at the components of the model, the domains. If you use those questions, you're going to have a very good sense of the health beliefs and practices of the person that answered the questions. They're good, but they're lengthy. They're kind of hard to institute in a clinical setting. You have to really balance the length versus how much time you have. Other questions? Okay, I believe we're moving on.
Thank you so much.